Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. There is a wave of fascination with new brain research, and it seems to be splitting us up into disparate parts. Haven't we advanced in our understanding beyond Descartes? We don't live in our brains. Our brains are a part of our physiology, which include the systems that allow us to live and function. You can find all the same things in our gut. All our systems, nervous, innate, immune, vascular, detoxification, all start in our gastrointestinal tract. Go ahead, tell me that your gut told you that this is true. In health and healing, our digestive system is the root of so much. Forget about brain fitness programs, which simply increase your agility at the specific tasks they teach you. How about gut fitness? Truly, without happiness in your tummy, it's difficult to have it anywhere else. Stay tuned to hear how everything going on inside you reflects on your outside. First, some thoughts from Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. A little over a decade ago, the science journalist Gary Taubes challenged the dominant theory of heart disease in the mainstream media. One critique was published in Science magazine with the title, The Soft Science of Dietary Fat, and another was published in the New York Times with the title, What If It's All Been a Big Fat Lie? Now Mr. Taubes has published a critique of nutrition science in a short piece in the Times titled, Why Nutrition is So Confusing. His focus is the growing prevalence of type 2 diabetes and obesity. He argues that the nutrition science needed to address these problems isn't being done, and practically speaking, can't be done. This isn't as radical as it might sound. He's not talking about the corruption of science by the food industry, nor the failure to shift attention from food to the increased exposure to persistent organic pollutants, also referred to as obesogens, and genetically modified organisms, nor the effect of poverty and inequity that are the result of capitalist class society. What he's talking about is the failure of nutrition researchers to conduct rigorous, double-blind, placebo-controlled experiments of hypotheses about the causal relationship between food and illness. In the absence of this high-quality, gold-standard science, we are left with many essentially unproven ideas about what to do about type 2 diabetes and obesity. We get a mini-lecture on the scientific method, including Karl Popper's theory of falsification, to show why nutrition science is what Taubes calls, quote, a field of sort of science in which hypotheses are treated as facts because they're too hard or expensive to test, end quote. A principal reason they're too hard or expensive is that the effects of food on health need to be studied for decades. In my opinion, they need to be studied for generations. In a letter to the Times in response to the Taubes article, two researchers, Michael Rothkopf and David Jenkins, acknowledge the accuracy of the critique, but go on to extol the virtues of a widely published randomized clinical trial conducted in Europe that shows the marvelous results obtained from something called the Prevention Mediterranean Diet. They've promised to repeat the clinical trial in the U.S. and Canada, so I guess Taubes' doubts are answered, or not. On the one hand, we have a skeptical evaluation from Gary Taubes telling us that nutrition science just isn't up to the task based on entirely conventional and highly restrictive science. On the other hand, we have diet enthusiasts advocating their nutrition science. For me, this shows how conventional skepticism and advocacy form the poles around which knowledge of eating and health rotate. Pay no attention to the aforementioned men behind the curtain, the food industry, food pollutants, and class society. It's all ideology, by which I mean false consciousness, by which I mean having ideas that cause you to act against your own interests. Taubes presents the ideology best. Quote, obesity and diabetes are epidemic, and yet the only relevant fact on which relatively unambiguous data exists to support a consensus is that most of us are surely eating too much of something. End quote. Consensus of whom? Conventional experts in the scientific method. Take a moment to consider that both Taubes and Rothkopf and Jenkins are saying that they'll only want to act on knowledge obtained through the scientific method as described by Taubes. But does Taubes accurately describe the scientific method? If so, then works such as Darwin's On the Origin of Species don't count as science. There's no gold standard randomized controlled trials anywhere in those pages. No report of experimental results, no experiments for that matter. Just observations and the ideas that explain them. In fact, a good deal of what we think of as science can't conduct clinical trials. It's critical to note that clinical trials are expensive to conduct. That makes them accessible only to people with money or access to money, which means someone with money is willing to give it to them. Taubes even says that a principal limit to the nutrition science he yearns for is, quote, no pharmaceutical company stands to benefit, end quote. But the key point here is that the Taubes version of the scientific method places knowledge in the hands of experts. Elsewhere, I called it privileged knowledge. And that privileged knowledge by a cadre of sanctioned experts has been a characteristic of the capitalist mode of production for 150 years. In practice, we figure out what to eat all on our own. Often, we put some thought into what might make us ill and what might make us healthy. Personal experience feeds that knowledge, including what we learn from other people and how we are led to adopt or reject or ignore their ideas. Media outlets, conventional and otherwise, put us in contact with many of those other people. Many, even most of those other people, are experts with privileged information, but not all. But the most important effect of privileged information in capitalist and the capitalist culture of expertise is that when it comes to taking officially sanctioned actions, such as what is and is not in the Farm Bill or school lunch program or dietary guidelines, only privileged knowledge will be considered and only experts will be heard. That's the ultimate effect of the scientific method and expert consensus advocated by Gary Taubes and why it is ideology. After all, if we civilians had the power and capacity to figure out what's good to eat as a matter of self-governance, who knows where that might lead? A transcript is available at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett is a political economist, writer, and health integrationist who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. And now to today's topic, and also the title of Our guest's latest book, The Digestive Connection. We're welcoming back Elizabeth Lipsky, who has a doctorate in clinical nutrition and is board certified in clinical nutrition, holistic nutrition, and as a nutrition specialist. Dr. Lipsky is the academic director of nutrition and integrative health programs at Maryland University of Integrative Health. She is a faculty member at the Institute for Functional Medicine and the Autism Research Institute. She's a special advisor to the National Association of Nutritional Professionals on the Nutrition Alliance Board for the Center for Nutrition Advocacy and on the advisory boards for the Ceres Community Project, Food as Medicine, and Autism Hope Alliance. She's the author of Digestive Wellness, The Digestive Connection, Digestive Wellness for Children, and Leaky Gut Syndrome. She's been working in the field of integrative and functional medicine for over 30 years. She offers webinar-based mentoring programs and advanced nutritional forums for nutritionists, dietitians, and other clinicians through Innovative Healing, Inc. And welcome back.
Hi, Lena. It's so nice to be here and hear you and Jeffrey. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting reading your bio. I realized that it's been about 30 years, that, well, 25 at least, that we've known each other. So
we have. My kids were really little when we met.
Yeah. They're still cute, though. from the pictures you sent. Not little, but cute. So, you know, one of the things that is really paramount for people to understand that's really that people don't understand is even if symptoms aren't felt in the gut is always the first place to look when someone's struggling with their health, don't you think?
I do. For me, when I look at the digestive system, I get really excited because the first reason to look at it is that the reason that we eat food in the first place is in order to get nutrients to every single cell in our body. So if for any reason that our digestion isn't working right and we don't get the right nutrients to the cells in every single organ and tissue in our body, then we're not going to have the right energy. We might have skin issues or headaches or be fatigued or not be able to think very clearly. And so for me, you know, we can just start there as a basic, that if digestion's not working right, nothing else in the body works right.
Yeah, well, I mean, among other things, if you're not absorbing nutrients, your vascular system isn't working. And if the vascular system isn't working, it's not delivering all these neurotransmitters and nutrients to the rest of your systems. And as you say, it's even mind and mood, certainly autism, but even just people with problems with depression can be pointed back to some issue with digestion and possible food sensitivities, all sorts of stuff like that.
All sorts of things. What a lot of people may or may not know is that two-thirds or more of the immune system is in the digestive system. And the reason why that's true is that every year we eat somewhere around a ton of food, each of us. And so we're taking in this foreign objects we call food, and our immune system's job is to say, is this friend? Is this foe? If this is a stranger, is this a dangerous stranger? Or is this somebody I'd like to know? And our body does that with every bite that we eat. Our body has to make this determination, which is why the immune system is mostly in the digestive system. And we also run our entire metabolism from what's called the gut microbiome, which is the microbes that live in the human digestive system. And we have about somewhere between 3.5 to 4.5 pounds of bacteria and fungi and maybe even some parasitic bugs. And mostly we live in great harmony with all of this. And when this is in harmony, we feel pretty great. And our metabolism works good and our thinking works well, and we make the right neurotransmitters, which we make like somewhere between 80 to 90% of the serotonin that we make in the body is made in the digestive system.
Big time.
Yeah. So we use that for helping regulate bowel movements so that we have nice, even bowel movements. So pretty much every single neurotransmitter that we make in our brain, we make in our digestive system, and it has different functions in the digestive system than it does in the brain. But everything is intricately linked. And, you know, when we were kids, we used to sing that song, like, the ankle bone's connected to the leg bone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is that every organ is linked. You know, it's like a big symphony that we live in, except way more complex than that. And for me, you know, the digestive section is kind of like the string section. You've got to have it in balance, otherwise the symphony doesn't work right. But also, you know, if the lungs aren't working right and taking in oxygen, we're also not going to function well. Or if the heart isn't beating, we're not going to have a good time either. So,
no, not very
good.
No. Not for very long, though.
No,
the heart stops beating if you... You have to, well, except actually, I did a very interesting show about resuscitation medicine, and we discovered that long after the heart stops beating, the brain and the cells are still viable for, I don't know, it was like 8 or more hours later. So consciousness is likely still there. So that's kind of whoa. But anyway, so that said, well, let me just quickly say that this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone today with one of my favorite guests, Elizabeth Lipsky, PhD, Dr. Lipsky. And we are discussing the latest incarnation of her remarkable encyclopedic book about digestion, which is also, when I say encyclopedic, I don't mean that it's daunting to read. It's very easy to read and extremely detailed in all sorts of areas. The Digestive Connection. And so all of this, the reason that this is all significant is that, as I said at the beginning, there are so many people who are really chronically ill or depressed, and 15%, you say, of the population has irritable bowel. And what happens in that situation is that they're given pharmaceuticals, they're given antidepressants, or they're given gut medication, which always, in my experience, makes things worse.
I want to just tell you two quick stories.
Sure.
I have a dear friend who, I won't go into the whole story, but he's been depressed his entire life. He has had lifelong major depressive issues. And for a series of medical reasons, he had most of his colon removed.
Oh, my God.
Which was life-saving.
Okay.
After he had his colon removed, he wasn't depressed for several months.
Oh, my.
For several months. Mm. Or we know that there are people who go through gastric bypass surgery who have diabetes. And after a Roux-en-Y, which is a very, very serious kind of surgery that bypasses some of the most important parts of your digestive system, people who are diabetic within days are off of insulin. There's something about this gut microbiome that affects everything. It affects blood sugar levels, and it affects how happy we are and how our brain functions. And we're just at the very tip of infancy in learning about how all this works. But on a much more general level, I've worked with several, many, many clients who we do really simple things like take sugar and gluten-containing grains out of their diet. And the next thing you know, they're feeling really great. Or I had one client who every time she would eat sugar or dairy products, she would feel really tired and really miserable and depressed. And every time she would take those two food groups out of her diet, just sugar and dairy, she felt like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeffrey was talking about how, what if we put the power back into each person's hands? And I think really the power of nutrition and the power of a healthy digestive system is that most people, underneath it all, have a pretty good sense of what makes them feel better or worse.
To some degree, one of the sneaky little things that happens, though, is that people tend to be very addicted to the foods that they have sensitivities to. So food sensitivities have a nasty habit of addicting you to the foods. So even in the first 2 weeks of an elimination diet, you can have some obstreperous cravings and symptoms. So it isn't obvious to people sometimes, because in my experience working with people as well, there's a masking of symptoms. The body has adapted in a maladaptive way to the offending substances, and so you just feel sort of generally lousy, and you can't identify which it is. But when you do an elimination diet, what happens is that your sensitivities become more acute, and so when you try to eat other, when you try to reintroduce the food or something like that, you start to have symptoms again. So it's dicey, because it's foods that people feel like they can't live without. Those are usually the ones that are causing the most trouble, oddly.
They are. So let's talk about a couple of those instances. I'm sure you've talked about, and we've talked about on your show many times, like candidiasis, which is a yeast overgrowth, fungal overgrowth in the digestive system that can cause or contribute to depression and migraines and confusion and skin issues like psoriasis and eczema and irritable bowel syndrome and so many other issues. Well, those yeast love to eat sugars and refined carbohydrates. So when we have a yeast infection, we crave those foods. And it's not just us craving the foods, it's the bugs that are craving the foods. And the same is true with people who have, many people who have irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. It is somewhere, you know, in women, about 17% of women have irritable bowel syndrome. About 17% of teenagers have irritable bowel syndrome, which is characterized by either really horrible constipation, diarrhea, alternating diarrhea and constipation, just feeling like your tummy is gassy and bloated and then you have a bowel movement and you feel better. It's kind of, you don't have any kind of serious medical condition, but you feel kind of miserable and your quality of life is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I have clients who don't date because of it. Mm-hmm. I have clients who don't go to parties because of it. They don't like being in social situations, or they don't leave their house until afternoon because they never know what their morning's going to look like.
Mm.
It's really changes your quality of life.
Mm.
Recently, a friend of mine called and she said, we were talking and I said, you know, you've had this irritable bowel syndrome for such a long time and you're walking on this tightrope where if you eat only certain foods, you feel okay, but as soon as you eat like a normal person, you feel terrible again. And so she said, you know, the one thing that's really helped is this probiotic that my doctor prescribed for me. So if I do that and eat just the right way, I'll be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, let's try some herbs. Let's try an herbal combination and just see what that does to you, because the research indicates that somewhere between around 50% of people who have irritable bowel syndrome actually have something called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth,
mm-hmm.
which is a really low-growing, insidious bacterial infection. And so you can use herbs like berberine from Oregon grape or some oil of oregano or grapefruit seed extract or some of the many kind of herbal combination products. And so we tried some of those with her. And she's like, oh, my goodness, I haven't felt this good in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
In 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that makes this very, first of all, it's a very important issue that you're bringing up, which is that you can have an imbalance of creatures in your gut. You need the creatures. The creatures are, you're a planet. We're all planets, and we have creatures living in there. And when there's an when one group sort of takes over, it causes an imbalance, just like it does on the Earth, like what we're doing to the Earth right now, I think. But nevertheless, so the candida is interesting because candida also chelates out metals.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have candida. You don't want to eliminate all the candida in your gut. You want to do this very gently. And adding in the probiotics. And one of the things I've learned from you recently is that although a lot of companies are increasing the amounts of bifidus and lactobacillus and all of this in their products, they're nowhere near strong enough to really work on somebody who has honest to gosh symptoms. I mean, real strong symptoms. So you need, you said, a good 100 billion a day. And I've experimented with that, and it is extraordinary because there is also research that shows that having sufficient numbers of these fellows and girls in your gut reduces anxiety symptoms. So it does everything. So what I'm saying is that the other route here, along with just the probiotics, is like the first, I think, thing to do, especially, but also to be very careful that you're getting, if you're sensitive to foods, one that's truly dairy-free and has no casein. And maybe we can talk about this, too, about whether or not it should have prebiotics in it, because some people get symptoms from those. But the next round gets more complicated, because although there can also be an imbalance of these other critters, how you eliminate them gets tricky if you've got somebody with an extremely raw gut. So some of the herbs are tricky. You have to be very individualized. People have to be very sensitive and go slowly with this stuff because people are extraordinarily different.
Oh, everybody's different. So it's important to work with somebody who you trust, who can help guide you through this. And I've had clients that I work with, I say, you know, let's start with the amount that that you can put like on the head of a pin. Let's
mm-hmm.
just start with this teeny little amount
mm-hmm.
and let's see how you do. And then let's give you a little bit bigger of a little pinch and see how you do. And, you know, one of the fascinating parts of research these days is that the gut microbiome, we have 10 times more bacteria in our digestive system than we have cells in our body.
Mm.
And 99% of the DNA in your body, in my body, and everybody who's listening, is made from these microbes. which is to say that we are 1% human in terms of DNA in our body and 99% microbial. And it's one of the reasons why we have fewer genes in our body than a carrot or a fruit fly or zucchini. You know, we don't have that many genes because we are in this big symbiotic relationship with all of the microbes that live inside of us. And they regulate hormone balance, they regulate insulin and create neurotransmitters and make B complex vitamins and vitamin K, and they modulate our immune system, which is one of the biggest things that they do. And they're just so integral, and they regulate our metabolism. So they also determine whether we're fat or thin and how our leptin and ghrelin work and, you know, how satisfied we are with the foods that we eat. It's just kind of this kind of amazing world that is just being discovered and trying to be picked apart. I think one of the most important pieces to remember, though, is that people always got probiotics from their food. And until we had refrigeration 100 years ago or so, food would spoil and people would eat these fermented and cultured foods. And now, as part of the American diet, we don't really do that anymore because everything's kind of packaged or we eat it fresh and we don't let things kind of go sour on us or have an opportunity to, you know, how many of us eat sauerkraut every day or drink a little bit of sauerkraut juice or eat kimchi or eat cultured and fermented foods. And I know not everybody can tolerate them that well, but kind of little bits of them is how people always repopulated and kept this gut microbiome in balance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even grains, which are very hard for people to digest, most people, if they're cultured, can be digested better. But the other thing is that if you make your own cultured foods, you can control the amount of fermentation that goes on. And since they're an acid-loving bacteria, you can ease up a little bit and do it, you know, 5 days, 7 days of sauerkraut and have it be a little sweeter. So people have control over that. I will say this. You've devoted so much of your time writing these really very complete books on how to understand where to start, what to think about, what to test, what to do, what sorts of things to do. So I will say that even if you do some of that, do is sort of what we've been talking about. Even if you do the things, but for yourself, even if you experiment with yourself on this, there is ample information in your book to get a sense of what directions to try. The key here is to remember that people who have sensitive guts can react strongly to certain herbs that kill creatures. So you just have to, like you said, proceed very slowly and also maybe even notice whether when you smell the herb, whether it's attractive to you. Because if it doesn't smell good to you, it's probably, or taste good, it may not be the right thing. So, then there are other ways around this also. So.
Yeah, one of the greatest joys to me as an author is when somebody writes me an email or sends me a letter or gives me a phone call and says, you know, I read your book and my fibromyalgia's gone, or my migraines are gone, or this health condition that I'd had for, you know, 15 years is gone. And I was in a lunch line at a conference, and somebody took my lunch ticket, and then she just looked at me. She said, "Can I give you a hug?" And I said, "Sure." And she said, "Your book saved my sister's life."
Oh, yeah.
She had celiac disease, and we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why I love writing books, is mm-hmm. because people really can be helped because we do live in our bodies and we knew them better than anyone else does and we know what makes our body feel better and worse, but we need somebody to help guide us through that. And I think if a book is well written, it can be the first step in helping you do that. And then if you can't get the relief that you need, then you go and you work with somebody who can help guide you and be your mentor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly so. Yeah, the idea here is to train people to think critically and more, be more attentive to the details, the information the body's giving them. So we need to take just a brief musical break. You are listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. We're on the phone delightfully with author of The Digestive Connection, Dr. Elizabeth Lipsky. And we're talking about digestion and how complete it is in terms of a start for healing. So please stay with us. We'll be right back with more of this interview. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett sitting by. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows with our library card feature. Find information about our practice, free stream of this week's show, a full hour, our book, and lots more. It's yourownhealthandfitness.org, again, all spelled out. If you want to reach us, please email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. And we are on the phone today with author of The Digestive Connection, Dr. Elizabeth Lipsky, and Digestive Connection. Isn't that what I said?
Digestion.
Oh, Digestion Connection. Digestion Connection. It's sitting right here in front of me. Probably not enough probiotics yet. The brain is lagging. I think it's because, you know, for a long time the book was Digestive Wellness, and it's gone through changes. Thank you, Jeffrey. Oh, dear. Anyway, Elizabeth Lipsky, and Liz, I think you have maybe places you want to send people to, websites or anything?
Sure. Well, first of all, I have an archival site that has all kinds of free information on it called accesstohealthexperts.com. And my main site is innovativehealing.com. And I would be remiss if I don't mention Maryland University of Integrative Health, where I run the nutrition programs. And we have both on-campus and online programs. And so our email is muih.edu.
Thank you. Okay. How can you tell initially whether you have, I think there's a way you can tell the difference between food poisoning and everything else, because the food is representing itself. It kind of lets you know by its presence in front of you instead of inside you. But sometimes it's hard to tell whether you've got an infection with a parasite or a bug or food poisoning or a flu. Ooh, long silence. Well, I will say that with food poisoning, it's very clear because it happens within a few hours of, the, you know, 4 hours or so, and then you really are eliminating
it.
You're really eliminating this stuff. Your body's going out, and then it's over with. A parasite seems to cause, in my experience, you should tell me if it's yours also, it's more likely to cause an irritable bowel where you go back and forth between diarrhea and constipation for a long time.
It can. Parasites can also cause a lot of diarrhea, or they can kind of settle in and have much more subtle symptoms where you don't even know. You just know that you don't really feel well. Mm. And I've also worked with people who have had parasites, and they've gone down to Mexico or they've gone on a trip and they've come back with some kind of parasite, and they get treated for it, and the next thing they know, they are intolerant to dairy products or to gluten-containing grains or some kind of food group. So it's really interesting. You know, the thing about differentiating and flu and food poisoning and parasites is that the food poisoning and the flu, they're both acute events. They kind of come through you, they go through you, and then within, you know, with food poisoning, usually within a couple of days, you're feeling amazingly better, although it can linger on, and there are some people who die from food poisoning. There are people who get the flu, and it can linger on, but for most of us, we get food poisoning or the flu, and, you know, with food poisoning within a few days, within the flu within a week or two, we're back to our old selves. With parasites, what you'll see is that people can suffer with parasites for years, and they have these mostly digestive problems, but you can also see that people with parasites, they can also have skin issues, they can have elevated liver enzymes, they can feel like they're just exhausted all the time because the parasites are actually eating food that they're supposed to be eating. And so you can see all kinds of kind of chronic issues that surround parasites. And every once in a while, I'll be lucky enough to work with somebody who they'll say, you know, I feel really great for about a week or 10 days. And then my body starts going through this series of symptoms, which culminates in all these GI symptoms. And then I have these bowel movements. And then I feel great again. And then the cycle starts all over
again.
Yeah,
it has a cycle, yeah.
And, you know, it's because these parasites have their own cycle and their own rhythm. So if you're somebody who finds that you feel really great and then you feel really lousy and then you feel really great and really lousy, that's a big tip-off that you might be having either menstrual cycles or that you might have a parasite.
There are many, many, many more people having issues with food, and I believe that some of this is environmental. It's also influenced by people eating foods that have been manipulated by food science, you know, processed foods, GMO foods. So both adults and children, babies, not only need the probiotics, but there are very important things to consider, you know, in terms of protecting yourself from those items. So obviously, oh, I should just very quickly say that bismuth is really good with food poisoning. So as much as I don't like Pepto-Bismol, but now also Caopectate now also is a bismuth product. The bismuth does do an immediate kill on what's going on with the food poisoning and can stop some of the symptoms. So that can help. It's very easy. But anyway, in terms of raising a healthy baby without a damaged gut, and also in terms of, we have just a few minutes here, but just a quick mention of all the things we need to kind of sidestep in terms of food science and processed foods and things to protect the gut.
Yeah, you know, there's a huge question.
I'm sorry.
I really agree with you that, you know, when we talk about leaky gut, which we haven't actually talked about, but what it is, it's a permeability of the small intestine that lets in large food molecules that are not completely digested, but also lets in those bacteria and yeast that we were talking about, the parasites we were talking about, and also chemicals that a healthy small intestine wouldn't let through. It would say, no, you don't belong here. You pass out in the stool, and that's done. But now these things are getting right into your bloodstream. And so, you know, there are definitely, you want to just start with the basics, like eat real food. Eat food that your great-grandparents would recognize most of the time. It doesn't have to be 100% of the time, but most of the time, eat real food. Make your own food. Cook at home. If you're going to restaurants, go to restaurants that home cook food, that don't just get things frozen and then defrost them and put sauces that they get in big packets on that are loaded with all kinds of bad chemicals. You know, so we want to start with the beginning. As you mentioned also, I think it's really important for pregnant women to be taking a good probiotic, and also for breastfeeding women to keep taking those probiotics so mm-hmm. that your infants can get the probiotic right through
right.
your milk,
okay.
and also to just kind of take your finger and put it in. There are special probiotics that are made for infants
mm.
that you can buy at health food stores, like Natron makes one called Neonate,
mm-hmm.
That's not the name of it.
Well, we can go back to that, but yeah. they can look for it. Just very briefly, I want to remind people that you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone today with Dr. Elizabeth Lipsky. Her latest book is The Digestion Connection, and we are discussing how to protect and heal the gut. So, putting a little finger in some powder and putting it, you know, rubbing it on the baby's gums.
Yeah, that works great. And, you know, even moving backwards from that, one of my big soapboxes these days is, and working with clients has been for decades, that if you're a couple and you know you want to get pregnant, or you're even a single woman, you know you want to get pregnant, the time to really start thinking about detoxification is before you get pregnant. And so taking 6 months to detoxify, to check yourself to see that you don't have heavy metals, to go on a cleanse, to kind of pull out some of the chemical residues that's in your body can make a huge difference. There's a physician named David Berger who works with autistic families, and he's got over 500 families, and he hasn't kept perfectly accurate records, but he did publish a couple years ago and say, you know, where parents already have an autistic child and we can go through detoxification and look at their MTHFR genes and do everything that we can to optimize an upcoming pregnancy, that in those families, the parents don't end up having any more children with autism or asthma or ADD or any of those problems. So, you know, when right now one in every 88 children the age of 5 is diagnosed with autism in our country, and with about 10% of our kids being diagnosed with ADD, attention deficit with hyperactivity disorder, when 10% of our children, according to the Surgeon General, are depressed enough to warrant medication, I think we really need to start looking at what can we do from the ground up so that we do preconception planning to have healthier babies and resulting in having healthier children and healthier adults lifelong.
Yeah, one of the things I'd add to that is that you and I approach detoxification slightly differently, but I have learned from all the years that I've been working with people, too, that it's, again, people are extraordinarily different, and it is important to sort of decide, based on what you're learning, what the best approach for you is. But my orientation toward detoxification is to start with the health of the liver and to sort of get the detoxification pathways working, which means methylation and taking care with nutrient supplementation that you've got enough sulfur-containing amino acids and stuff to help your liver have the raw materials to make glutathione. But it's interesting that you mentioned some of these genetic variants, because MTHFR is a big one, and lots of people are testing positive on both sides of their family with it. And it shy of autism, it causes compulsion and all kinds of other psychological symptoms.
Yeah, cancer, depression, neural tube defects. It goes on and
yeah.
on.
And it's actually fairly easily helped by using, among other things, a good B12 supplement, not a cyanocobalamin B12, but probably a hydroxy, maybe a methyl B12, and folic acid in a high enough dose with enough folinate in it. So it is possible to intervene You know, these,
it is.
These,
you know, 50% of us have some variation in our MTHFR gene.
Mm-hmm.
And 10% of us only get 10% utilization of folate.
Right, exactly.
Because of it. And
that's right.
And 40% of us only get between 40 and 60% utilization of our folate. And when you look at where folate, where the MTHFR gene, how that sits in biochemistry, it does. It goes on to how well we make glutathione, how well we make SAMe, which
the antidepressant,
involved with depression, but also joint health.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at it the other way, it goes to neurotransmitter synthesis. So it sits at the hub of so many important things. And I actually don't disagree with you. When I'm working on detoxification, I start with liver as well. And, you know, the phase one and phase two liver detoxification pathways rely on amino acids and sulfur-containing amino acids and sulfur-containing nutrients and B vitamins and antioxidants. And so it goes back to, what are people eating in the first place? And are they getting enough protein? And are they getting enough nutrients? And the average person isn't.
Well, how do you handle it when you've got a moral vegetarian or vegan, even harder? Because with a vegetarian, you can give them eggs and dairy if they can tolerate the foods, if they don't have food allergies on top of everything else, and they'll get the sulfur-containing aminos. Or you can actually take sulfur-containing aminos, you know, the pharmaceutical-grade ones. But how do you handle it if you've got someone who is very set on being a vegetarian and you sense that the liver is not detoxing properly?
Well, it's a good thing I'm not in practice anymore. it doesn't come up that often anymore.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
But what I will say is that there are people who can be healthy vegans.
Yes.
Most people crash and burn within 4 to 6 months on a vegan diet.
Right.
And I have worked with some people in the past who came to me because they were really ill. And I said, you know, I don't think that this diet serves you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for any of us, when we have a philosophical reason, or even we just read a great book that says, I need to be on a paleo diet, or I need to be on an anti-candida diet.
Oh, or the blood type stuff, which makes me insane, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is, and we hold on to it like it's gospel, even when it doesn't serve us, then we have a problem. Because throughout our lives, our body changes.
Doesn't it just? Yes.
It does. Mm-hmm. So when I was in my 20s and 30s, I was on a mostly vegetarian diet with like fish once a month and a little bit of dairy products, mostly cultured and fermented. And then one day I ate a piece of chicken when I was about 45. And my body just went, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yep.
I've been missing you.
Yeah, I had a similar kind of experience when I was living at Tassajara and being a Zen student in my 20s and living on this vegetarian diet, which was very hard for me. I was having lots and lots and lots of symptoms because I'm allergic to almost everything there is there. And I was on a side trip where I was helping somebody outside, and they made some chicken livers in hot sauce, you know, chipotle sauce, and I ate the chicken livers because I wasn't, I like the idea of being a vegetarian a lot. I really like it, but I hadn't been before. And afterwards, I felt like I could have done an expedition to Mount Everest. I just was overwhelmed with the energy and life I felt, and I thought, well, that's kind of clear. That's disappointing. And it is disappointing. It's heartbreaking.
It is. In my heart, I would love to be a vegan.
Me too.
In my heart, in my mind, I'd love to be a vegan.
Mm-hmm, me too.
In my body says, no way, girl.
Nuh-uh.
Not happening.
Not happening, right. Well, and then in terms of detoxifying, I think also I'm cautious about fasting because I think that if you just pay attention to the phase one, phase two stuff. In fact, last week we interviewed aromatherapy specialist who's a biochemist. Well, he's a chemist, actually. And there are essential oils that can stimulate phase two, and phase two is often the part of the process that people are damaged in, and the reason it becomes a problem is that if the phase two isn't working, then the phase one does its job, and then the phase two doesn't carry the proper materials out in the excrement, so the phase two has to work. And one of those things is lemon oil. I mean, you know, literally applied to your skin. It's so interesting. And then, of course, well, this is a good way to go into supplements and stuff, because you do talk about the fact that there are some key supplements that people are missing when their digestion is wounded.
Yeah, well, the first one is, as you said, we've talked about probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you take those as supplement or whether you eat them or you do both like I do, probiotics are critically important.
And lots of them.
And lots of them. Although, I will say sometimes it depends on the person. There
sure.
are people who I've worked with who I use as few as 3 billion colony-forming units of a very soothing probiotic called Lactobacillus plantarum, and it can really turn somebody around. So as we start learning more, there are very specific probiotics that we may be able to use in small doses that have very targeted effects.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who has had some dysbiosis, which is kind of this imbalance in the gut microbiome, or who's been on antibiotics, generally I'll recommend something more like 50 to 100 billion colony-forming units a day. And we even have research studies on people with ulcerative colitis flares where they'll give trillions.
Ooh.
Trillions. Mm. 2.6 trillion probiotics in a day. So, you know, again, you want to kind of do what fits. So for prevention, maybe having a little bit of yogurt every day, or some sauerkraut or kimchi, or drinking miso
mm-hmm.
soup every day might be enough for some people, whereas other people really need daily doses. Like, I take medication. So because of the medication, I feel like I ought to take probiotics every single day. And for me, it's just protective. There are other nutrients that are very important for healing the gut, and one of them is L-glutamine.
Very, very healing.
L-glutamine is what your small intestine uses to make energy and heal itself and generate new cells. So whereas most of our body runs on glucose, the digestive system doesn't. The small intestine runs on glutamine. And so when we've got a leaky gut, taking doses of L-glutamine can be very useful, anywhere from as little as 1,000 milligrams a day all the way up to maybe 30 grams a day of L-glutamine.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, depending on what's going on, typically I'll have people say, you know, take a teaspoon or two, put it in your water bottle and sip on it during the day. You're going to drink the water anyway. It may as well have some glutamine in it. And the other fascinating thing about L-glutamine is it prevents muscle wasting as we age.
It's wonderful stuff, yeah.
It's a really kind of fantastic. And again, every once in a while, it's not great for somebody. But
constipates some people, but it's usually not. Usually people need it. And, you know, it's interesting. It also, I discovered that Stanislav Brzezinski, who is a very brilliant cancer doc, has a cream to put on cancer spots, you know, on sun, you know, various spots. And it has L-glutamine in it. So I started putting L-glutamine in this face oil that I make for myself. And indeed, it's helping my skin.
Wow.
Right.
I have to start doing
awesome
that.
Stuff. Yeah, I can give you the recipe sometime.
Thanks.
You know, I can tell that very important not to run out of, I mean, this is in line with the nutrients. Of course, vitamin C and magnesium, because people are often constipated, and magnesium is really important. And it speaks to this issue, because magnesium is also a buffering agent, of people who have reflux and think they need to be on acid blockers. And if you take an acid blocker, you're likely to end up with a nice H. pylori infection, which may cause cancer later.
And also down the road, you're going to have mineral insufficiencies, calcium, magnesium, zinc, potassium, manganese, and many others, iron, because when you take an acid blocker for a long period of time, a proton pump inhibitor, which is what's generally recommended for many people with heartburn these days, is that what happens is that you need that acid in the beginning of the small intestine called the duodenum to allow you to actually absorb your minerals. So as we block acid for years and years, we also block mineral absorption.
And it's, yeah, oh, go ahead.
I wanted to just kind of go back to one of my favorite foods, too.
Okay.
And for healing a leaky gut.
Mm.
And that is making your own stock, mm-hmm. using fish, broth, vegetables, chicken bones, beef bones. Stocks are loaded with gelatin and glutamine and proline and all kinds of nutrients that are really gut healing. And way before we had nutritional supplements, people were healing what we now call IBS by using bone broth.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm working with somebody who's very sensitive and they can hardly eat any food, that's where we begin with tablespoons of bone broth. But in healthy people, using bone broth as the base to make soups, as to cook your grains in, to steam your vegetables in, and to just drink as a instead of tea or coffee, it's a great way to heal the gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. It is. And also good to know that if you do eat something that your stomach decides it can't deal with very well, and an hour later you have an acid stomach, you can take some magnesium or even a CalMag supplement and maybe chew, just bite it in half so it absorbs in your stomach, and it will buffer the stomach acid. It works quite well.
Well, that's the whole theory about using Tums.
Yeah, except Tums has all kinds of other
nasty. And also you can just also take a little bit of baking soda.
Exactly.
Baking soda in a glass of water and
cold.
Just drink it.
Yeah, cold water, it'll make you hurl. Cold water, baking soda. Yes, don't mix it with, don't drink it with vinegar added to it. It's explosive.
Become a volcano.
Here we go, yeah. So, the important thing here is that, as you say often, food is information, not just a collection of nutrients. And that's what this book seems to be about.
Yeah, you know, every bite is a political decision and a health decision. And so every bite that we eat either moves us closer to health or further away from health. And it's not like we need to be 100% pure in what we eat, but most of what we eat ought to really be nurturing to our body and give ourselves and our microbiome the right messages that says everything's right with my world, instead of the messages that much of our food these days gives us that says, help, help, I'm on fire, and I need help.
Yeah, and your body will speak to you if you are getting up, feeling pretty good, having breakfast, and then feeling extremely tired and dragged out. Look at what you ate for breakfast and maybe not have those foods for a couple of weeks and see if your energy shifts. You know, it can be that simple. But, yeah, doing some using your body as a lab can be very useful. And, of course, the book that Elizabeth Lipsky, Ph.D., along with many other letters after her name, Digestive Connection, which is her newest book, now published by Rodale. Liz, I really want to thank you. You are such a good guest. It's such a joy to have these conversations. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. I really enjoy talking with you.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for easier extended access to our over 500 archive shows with our library card. Find out about our practice, a free hour stream for this week's show, our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fit. Oh, and you can email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.